I am so excited to announce my newest baby, a book for parents all about tongue tie. Tongue Tie for Parents is the book you need if you have any questions about whether there's a tongue tie, how to get treatment, if your baby needs treatment, how to go about it, how to make decisions, how to help you and your baby recover. All of that is in this ebook. Every day I get questions from parents like you, and I know you need answers. Tongue Tie for Parents is built from the same step-by-step protocol I use when families sit across from me in my office. It's the information that you need for clarity, for confidence, and to help you make care decisions based on your own goals, because that's what's most important. You shouldn't need a Google search to get answers. You aren't crazy or overreacting. You are trying to figure out what is best for you and your baby. It's here and ready for you. Tongue Tie for Parents is an easy download. You can have it today for only $27. Go to tonguetieexperts.net/parentbook or follow the link in the show notes, because you and your baby deserve clarity, not confusion. You're listening to the Tongue Tie Experts podcast, a weekly program providing information and support for those families impacted by tongue and lip tie and the professionals caring for them. I'm Lisa Palladino, a midwife and a lactation consultant with over 30 years of experience. If you are a parent looking for answers or a professional who is curious to learn more than what you learned in school on this topic, welcome. This podcast is for you. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Tongue Tie Experts podcast. I am so excited today to be interviewing Dr. Brian Hatch. Dr. Brian Hatch is a board-certified pediatric dentist passionate about improving oral function and overall well-being for patients of all ages. A graduate of Case School of Dental Medicine, Dr. Hatch completed an advanced education in general dentistry residency, followed by a 2-year pediatric dental residency at Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital. Dr. Hatch's specialized training spans behavior management, sedation dentistry, treating patients with special needs, and addressing complex oral health challenges. Over the last several years, he has developed a focused expertise in oral ties and their impact on oral function, speech, feeding, and airway health. Welcome, Dr. Hatch.
Thank you.
On behalf of my audience, we are excited to have this conversation and delve into all the aspects of tongue tie care and oral function that you are involved with. So thank you for being here.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
And you're in California, right? In San Diego?
I am down in California in San Diego area, North County.
So San Diego, I've been there a couple of times, and I always refer to the most beautiful days in New Jersey as San Diego weather. However, 2 years ago, I was there for a conference and it rained the whole time.
Yes.
Like, the two days of the year it rained in San Diego, that's when I was there. Anyway.
Yeah, I think that was probably the time when they were like having floods and it was
yeah,
it was torrential. Yeah. They got so much water.
Yeah. Anyway, it was beautiful anyway. Yeah. it was so ironic because my husband and I were there years ago and I was there with a friend in between that. And we always talk about San Diego as being so beautiful. And I'm like so excited to be in San Diego. And I got there at the worst time. But anyway, you know what it's like in conferences. You barely get out of the hotel anyway.
It's true. You don't. So, yeah.
Yeah. So Dr. Hatch, what has gotten you into this field? Like, you're a dentist. You have tons of training. Very impressed by all the certificates and the postgraduate training you have. How did this happen to you that you wound up in this field?
So that's funny you should ask. When I got out of residency, it's It's something that I had had some experience in residency in dental school with oral ties. They don't really go over a whole lot, though, if I'm being honest, because I think at that time we didn't truly understand the impact.
Right. And what, just wondering, like, when that was, because I'm impressed that there was any education at all.
So that was, I did my dental school 2004 to 2008.
Okay.
Did a few lip tie releases for some elderly patients when we were doing dentures. And it was something that I noticed on my patients. Some of them would have limited range of motion for their tongue. And I started noticing that and thinking, okay, how is this impacting them? How is this making it to more difficult for them? Didn't really start putting things together though until later in my career. In pediatric residency, my director, he did train us on how to do releases while we were in the hospital, like doing treatment under general anesthesia. He showed us the techniques that have been there for a long time, basically using a hemostat to clamp the tissue and then releasing along that line. And he, you know, sometimes we would place sutures, sometimes we wouldn't. And that was about as far as the training went. After residency, I was practicing in Texas for a time, and, you know, a parent came to me and I noticed a tie right to the tip of the tongue for a patient. So we did a release. We had a, you know, a diode laser that I did a release with, and I felt comfortable at the time, but after that I was like, man, this is a lot more involved. And so this is about 2011, 2012. And this is a lot more complicated than what I had initially been trained on, because after the procedure, patient came back, still felt like there was some restriction. And then had a mom come, a lactation consultant actually, who was like, can you do a release for my baby? And so I did do that. That's one that we'd also been trained on in pediatric residency. And even so, after that, I was like, I don't know if I'm really getting it, like doing the best job.
So you recognize that something was missing in your education, which same thing happened to me on the, you know, the different side of things. Like, I know that this is a thing, but I don't fully understand it. How can I learn more? Right.
Yep.
And because you're not serving your patients. And in my case, I had patients who knew more about it than I did, which was a real wake up call.
That's how I felt. I felt like some of the parents, the lactation consultant, she understood a little bit more about it than I did. And I was like, well, I'm supposed to be the oral expert. So I should get more understanding about this. I didn't truly start looking into more education in the area because I was like, I'm just going to hold off. I will say that I'm not too comfortable. I know my own limitations. And I am a firm believer in doctors understanding their own limitations, and when they have a limitation, making sure that they refer to someone who they know has more expertise in that area.
I love that. So, I want to give you a standing ovation because that applies in every field, right? So if we had more pediatricians saying, I'm seeing you're having a breastfeeding problem, I don't really know enough about breastfeeding to manage this problem, go see this expert, right?
Yes.
The world would be a better place. And that happens with lactation too. Like, I know there's things I'm not expert in. Like, I'm not a gadgets person. Like, there are people who know how to do flange fittings and SNS things and all kinds of technical stuff. That's not me. So I refer to those people who, you know, for my patients. So you were realizing your limitations. And how did you jump from realizing that to finding the education? Was it difficult for you?
It took me some time, honestly. I transitioned out of Texas, went to Fresno, California, practiced for a little while. I was still trying to find the way that I wanted to practice. So I thought I was going to be in a partnership. We didn't do any ties at that office, and then decided that wasn't going to work out. So I uprooted my family and we moved to New Mexico and I started a new practice. Mm-hmm. And I decided then that I was going to start using a heart tissue laser for just doing dentistry. And from there, I started getting, like, on my website, it talked about lasers and stuff. And so then I was starting to get calls from parents. You have a laser. Can you do releases and right. things of that nature? And so it's one of the things where initially I was still hesitant because I was like, I don't know enough. And some of the parents were wanting me to do it on their infants. And in residency, we did have one instance where there was a release done on the labia, on the upper labial. And I don't know the specifics, but the bone in the area actually necrosed. And wow. so it may have been that the settings were up too high or something mm-hmm. like that. And this poor baby, you know, had that bone necrosing and bluffing off. So
I've never heard of that.
I hadn't either.
Yeah.
And so it was something that made me very hesitant about doing the release up there until I learned more. And so as my practice was going, I was like, okay, more parents are asking me to do this. And I did a few and I was like, okay, I'd watched some videos from Dr. Baxter. I had watched some things from other providers. And I was like, okay, I understand now that I don't understand enough. Mm-hmm. So then I started the journey. I looked for courses on basically oral ties. And so I was looking it up and found a course on tethered oral tissues that I took down in San Diego here. And it really opened my eyes to the issues that can be had. So I took that course and I realized for myself, oh, I have an oral tie.
Okay.
I had a tongue tie. And I was like, this is why I've never been able to breathe through my nose my whole life. Had my tonsils and adenoids out as a kid. So my issues, I never had any trouble. My mom said I never had any trouble nursing. I get to eat whatever I want. I never had any issues with speech, but I could never breathe through my nose. Even after my tonsils and adenoids were out, I still had a hard time. I mean, I was classic kid, you know, had bedwetting and waking up and, you know, sleepiness and tired and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I never realized until I took that course that I was like, wow, well, this would explain a lot. So I started, it was done by a myofunctional therapist and by Autumn Henning, and she was great. And
Autumn.
She's fantastic. Yeah. So, you know, it was a great course for me to really delve into it. So then I started trying to incorporate some of that stuff into my practice. Mm-hmm. And I started.
And then once you know it, you see it everywhere, right?
Yes. It's like you can't unsee what you've seen.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I started working with a myofunctional therapist in my area, Sandra Luz Gonzalez, and some of the other myofunctional therapist teams in New Mexico. And that was my journey. And from there I realized, okay, I got to improve my technique. Mm-hmm. I've got to make sure that I'm trying to get the best results for each one of my patients that we recommend a release for and start doing those things. And then I also, you know, the lactation consultants started referring more patients to me after that. So
yeah, I have, you know, I run a group that's like an interdisciplinary mentorship group. And one of the questions that comes up all the time is how to find people to work with. Yeah. And usually it's like I have a couple of OTs and IBCLCs who aren't finding their team, you know, and my experience is I'm not afraid to reach out to people. So the same way, like if somebody wanted to bring their patients to you or learn if you were a good care partner to refer to, what would you suggest that provider do? Like, what's the best way to approach someone like you who has the knowledge
For someone starting out, you mean going down the road of learning how to do the
No, I mean more like other people on the team, right? Who don't have a dentist to refer to, who want to be referring to dentists and having dentists refer back to them in a reciprocal, you know, relationship, referral relationship. What's the way to make that connection, in your opinion? Because I'm asking this of everyone lately, because I think it works differently for different people. I know how it works in my town.
I think this is a good question, because I've been trying to do this and moving into a new area, starting something, you know, where I'm focusing just on oral ties. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to, network with lactation consultants, with speech therapists, with myofunctional therapists, and the other members of a team that I was working with in my previous practice.
Right.
It's, I think, just calling, asking them, especially if you're looking for a dentist, asking them if they've taken any tethered oral tissue courses, if you know what their understanding is of an oral tie, because there are plenty of docs out there that they're doing them, but they are mainly just doing them for those that are like right to the tip or super thick and bulbous and things like that.
They haven't learned beyond school. They know what they are. They know technically how to do it, but that's not their expertise.
Exactly.
Right.
So, and I think
and just in some places that may be all that there is.
And that may be.
You know.
So it can be a challenge.
Yeah.
For sure. To find a provider that that is knowledgeable in this area, just because There is still some pushback sometimes from you know, members in my own profession and members in other professions. And it's interesting the pushback that we get. And I think it's going to take more of the family's success stories and you know, them reaching out to the providers that are saying, oh, you shouldn't get this done. And saying, well, these are the benefits that we saw afterwards.
Moms, you know those mornings when you wake up groggy, your mouth is dry, and you feel like you didn't sleep at all? A lot of that comes from mouth breathing, not just a long day with the kids. That's where OI tape can make a huge difference. It's a gentle, medical-grade mouth tape that helps you breathe through your nose while you sleep. It might sound a little unusual, but the results can be seriously life-changing. Deeper rest, more energy, and even less morning puffiness. And for parents especially, good sleep isn't a luxury, it's survival. What I love about OI tape is that it's hypoallergenic, toxin-free, made in the US, and comfortable enough for all-night wear. As a listener to this episode, you can save 20% on all OI products with coupon code TongueTie20. So if you're ready to breathe better and actually wake up rested, head over to oitape.com today. One of the questions, or one of the concerns that we have in this field, and I'm sure you share it, is the idea of someone looking at a tie or looking in the mouth, calling it a tie, treating it by releasing it without knowing if it really should have been released. So let's talk about that a little bit. How do you, where do you stand on function and how that's assessed, and you know, how do you approach that in your office?
So in my office, I go through a questionnaire that asks different questions about their function. If patients are a mouth breather, or if they're a nasal breather, if they're having trouble with speech or chewing certain textures of foods, we try to hit the four big ones, the chewing, the speech, if they had trouble nursing, or bottle feeding, and then being able to sleep with their mouths closed. Those are the big ones. And then we dial it down, you know, depending on the age of the patient, we will dial it down. For infants, we ask different questions than we do for older patients.
Right.
So I try to go through the questionnaire first and see where their challenges lie. And then when they're in the chair, I'll have them do some basic things, trying to open their mouth and then lift their tongue to the roof of their mouth. And then seeing how far they can lateralize, seeing if there's compensations with the jaw, if they're moving their jaw with their tongue. And then I'll get in and do an actual physical exam where I'm lifting the tongue up and feeling and seeing where the restriction is. Doing, you know, Dr. Zaghi has the floor of mouth hold that I think is fantastic, because that's a great way to see, you know, if the floor of the mouth is lifting up with the rest of the tongue, and seeing if that complex is all connected or if there is separation when there's movement. Right. So that's something that I'll do. And then from there, I will say, okay, I think you would benefit from a release. Or I will say, I think what you need to do is start with either myofunctional therapy, speech, or working with a lactation provider, depending on their age, to see if we can get better muscle tone. Because, you know, not all ties are restrictive. We all have a frenum, and we have to distinguish between what's a natural frenum and what is a restrictive oral tie. So that's where I think my standpoint is determining whether it's restrictive or whether there's some muscle dysfunction that we need to train.
So I like to ask, we could say three or four questions. Sometimes I break it up into four.
Yeah.
Is there a tight frenum? Is the tight frenum causing a problem?
Yes.
Right? Is there anything else either concurrent or different than the frenum causing the problem? So like in an infant, it would be torticollis or, you know, whatever. And then, you know, are there any, so that's the two different, that's really three questions. In the course, I go a little further and deeper into a fourth question, but we don't want to be correcting something if there's something else going on and we don't address that something else, we're going to get less than optimal outcomes. And then we're going to give this whole field a bad name, right?
Exactly.
I feel like we have to be so defensive in our practices now because of all the bad press, right?
Yeah.
And I like the way you're saying this, you know, not every frenum needs to be released. You know, of course, a lot of them do, unfortunately. And sometimes there are frenum that, like, there are some cases where we need to have some function. So we will release that frenum, or this is how I am in my practice or how I teach. We'll release that frenum with anticipatory guidance to the family that this may not be the be all and end all of your treatment. But at least maybe today we'll get some function.
Yes.
Right. And do you have those babies that can't latch at all? Their tongue is so restrictive. Everything else is optimized, but you can't get that baby on the breast.
Yeah.
You release the frenum.
Yep.
And then in a few, you know, then do other, make sure they have lactation support, make sure her milk supply is protected and all those things.
Yes. Those are, and that's the wording is I'll say, you know, there's no guarantee that this is going to be, you know, the fix, the miracle cure. But our hope is that we improve a little bit. We get the baby, you know, like for babies, get baby latching.
Right.
You know, deeper latch.
Mother
better seal, more comfortable, less, you know, less work for baby to be trying to do and making themselves tired and things like that. So those are things that I'll just make sure parents are aware that we can do the release and we hope that we will see some benefit, but we have to have other team members in place in order for us to optimize and make sure that there's nothing else going on. And if there is, we address those concerns as well.
So on both sides of the country, we're doing very similar work, which is always heartwarming to hear because there are some things that aren't ideal going on in the world. And that's what gives us our bad name, you know, the bad names to what we do and makes people critical of what we do, right?
It
the
is.
People that are saying, I can just snip this and everything will be all better.
Yes. And I have seen that a number of times.
Yeah.
Parents coming and they, you know, someone snipped it and it wasn't quite done right. And they're still having issues. And so we have to figure out the best course of action from there.
Yeah. And, if somebody comes to you and they say, I don't want to work with a lactation consultant. I don't want to do anything else. I just want to do this. Have you ever had that situation where this is going to be, you know, there are some challenges, right? Not everybody has the bandwidth to be educated and to reach out to other people and to get all the care points in place.
Oh yeah.
And do you have that situation often?
I have had that situation often. And it can be a challenge. And, you know, at times there are times when I have talked with those families, and whether it's financial or they just don't believe in certain, you know, other things, or they're like, this is my fifth baby and I've done this before. I don't want to work with lactation and things like that. It's, you know, those are issues that I tell parents, well, okay, if that's your choice, this is what I'm recommending. And, you know, if you want me to move forward, we can, but we're not going to be able to get the best results. Hopefully we'll get some improvement, but you know, I don't know how the results are going to be. Some families where, you know, it's just like right on the borderline, and I'm like, you know, you're functioning okay. Yes, there are some minor things, but we need to do these other things first before we can. And I don't feel comfortable doing a release just to do the release. It's definitely not something that we want to do. The kids that and patients that I've treated where parents are unwilling, where I've done the treatment, it's mainly when they're like almost right to the tip or right to the tip, and I'm like, okay, we are going to get some benefit, but I don't know. Without those other services and working with the other professions, I don't know how optimized we're going to get those.
Right. And they may be back to you as children with other things.
And I told them that I'm like, you know, there's a good chance that we may have to, you know, address these issues later.
Right.
Maybe a new release or making sure that we're working with those providers so that we get, you know, we get improvement.
Right. So,
these are things to look for.
Yeah. And before we started recording, we started a conversation about the ripple effect on the whole system of the body of untreated oral ties. And you started alluding to your own journey. I've had my own journey as well. And one of the, I don't know, challenges right now, and maybe a challenge forever, is that we don't know for sure if treating a tongue tie in infancy is going to prevent challenges, right?
Exactly.
And I do say, though, that if we optimize the function at every level, chances are better that it will be better as we grow up.
Exactly. Right?
So what, you know, give me some thoughts on that. Like, what are you seeing in kids that makes you say, I wonder if I would have seen them when they were younger, if things could have been better here?
So, I actually had a number of kids that I've treated where parents had the concern and, you know, tried to talk to providers about getting it taken care of. And they were given the information that, oh, they'll grow out of it. This doesn't really, it's not going to affect too much later on. Things of that nature. And then, you know, I see the patients at 5 or 6 and they're grinding their teeth, their palate's narrow. They, you know, they are waking up at night or they're having trouble chewing. They're very picky with their foods. Parents are telling, well, they've been going to speech for 4 years. And, you know, so it is one of those things where I think to myself, if we had treated this, if they hadn't been brushed off by a previous provider, or told that their child would grow out of it, or it would stretch, or whatever they're telling parents.
Mm-hmm. It's just about breastfeeding. I hear that all the time.
Exactly. If they hadn't said that, what issues would we have faced these issues, you know, as these patients grow? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, I don't have the answer. Right. Maybe we would have. But I think that we could have helped improve, these patients' lives from the get-go.
Yeah.
Right. If we take care of those issues in infancy, I would tell parents all the time, the best time to take care of it, I feel, is in infancy. When you're noticing issues right away, we should take care of this, whether it's through, working lactation, improving the function, whether it's doing a release, all of those therapies. I know they have red light therapy that they're, you know, doing now that's helping with some of the fascia and stuff. So there's many different ways that we can help improve function. And it doesn't always, you know, involve a release, but.
Yeah, I love that you're saying that, because I think we have to start separating the idea of treatment and phrenotomy. They're not, they're not equal to each other. They're not. No, we can have, we can do a lot of things to treat without doing surgical procedure, you know?
Yeah.
So, and you know, I'm a midwife by training. That's how I came to this crazy world. And very non-interventional in everything. So when I first heard about tongue ties, and I hadn't learned anything but the basic anterior tie, heart-shaped tongue, you know, baby who can't lift their tongue at all. That's what I learned in nursing school, in midwifery school, and not too much more when I was studying for my IBCLC.
That's about all we learn in dental school too.
Yeah. And then when I started seeing more and more babies that I couldn't help them with all my lactation tricks. And I was pretty darn good at getting babies latched and, you know, all the things.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of babies that I couldn't help. And I, and somebody said, oh, there's a dentist, or there was an ENT in Brooklyn snipping tongue ties. And I was horrified, because I was like, why would we have to do something to a baby to help them feed? That was my initial reaction.
Of course.
So I give grace to all of those who haven't learned yet, because we've all been there. We've all been there.
We don't know what we don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. But we have to have the intellectual curiosity to say, something's going on. Maybe I should learn about this. And that's exactly what I did, you know. But the rabbit hole, so to speak, of going from this baby can't breastfeed and then heading it into downstream to airway disorders and sleep apnea and cardiovascular effects. That's where I'm, not that I'm excited about it, but that's where my interest is now. Excited in an intellectual way of like, look at the world and how many chronically ill people we have that are related to oral function, whether it be tongue ties, or maybe even if you take tongue tie out of the equation, their oral function is not there. They can't breathe through their noses.
Yep.
Why is that? And what can we do in every stage of the lifespan to improve that? So that's my mission.
that has actually, and that's become my mission as well.
Yeah.
Helping patients improve their own airway, breathing, oral function, just because it is a ripple effect. You know, mouth breathing, we know that mouth breathing increases cavities. From a dental perspective, I would see so many kids where they're grinding their teeth. And for the longest time, we were like, oh, kids grind their teeth. That's fine. It's normal. And then, you know, the study came out in 2021, I think it was, from the AAPD, from the Academy of Pediatric Dentistry. It was Dr. Zaghi was a part of it. There was a number of Dr. Yoon. And they determined the 6 signs of sleep disordered breathing for kids. Grinding the teeth was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, light goes on. It's like, this is amazing. This is a great knowledge for us to have so that we can hopefully help start intervening.
Right. And for those who don't understand why are kids who are having trouble breathing at night grinding their teeth?
So this is a good question, because it's one, the airway, and those that aren't watching the YouTube, you know, that I'm making like an arch shape. If the palate is narrow, the tongue isn't lifting to the roof of the mouth. It has no room to lift there. So I liken it to the muscles of the jaw are trying to push that tongue up to the roof of the mouth as best as they can. And so when that happens, their jaw movement, and it creates that grinding. So they're trying to make that vertical dimension less. So they're trying to shorten that so that they can get their tongue to the roof of their mouth. This is a theory, according to Dr. Hatch. So, but that's in my mind is what's going on. They're trying to shorten that vertical dimension. And I've seen kids where they have ground their teeth, their front teeth are ground down right to the gums.
Wow.
And it's, it is, and it, you know, parents are like, what's going on? And initially I was like, you know, some kids just do that. But now I understand if I see that, I need to be looking, okay, is there a tie? Is there a narrow palate? Is, you know, is there a crossbite? Is there, are there large tonsils? Mm-hmm. How's their nasal? Are they able to breathe through their nose? Can they, can they close their lips relaxed? So it keys me in to looking for these other things that could be contributing to that grinding and to that oral dysfunction.
So they're literally trying to keep their airway open.
Exactly.
Right. As you're describing that, increasing the area and getting the tongue up, they're literally trying to get their tongue out of the way of the airway, right?
So that they can breathe through their nose.
Yeah. Yeah. Or get enough passage in the oral cavity, because some kids don't even have enough
room in their mouth.
You know, I've seen, you know, the CAT scans of the airway where it looks like a straw for mixing a drink, you know,
exactly. So small
cocktail straw, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is kind of really, really sad.
Yep.
And the fact that there are so many points of entrance to the system that can, you know, assess for this, and it's getting missed over and over and over.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I know it happened to my own kids. I have a daughter who we used to hear her teeth grinding.
Yeah.
Two rooms down, you know, and she was like six. And the orthodontist that I brought her to was how am I going to say this nicely? He wasn't enlightened, right?
Yeah.
And he did some expansion on her because she had an interesting history. She was born with a cleft lip. She didn't have a cleft palate, but she had a very odd shaped palate. Teeth were in the wrong place. She started orthodontia at a very early age. He was interested in expansion, but not for the reasons that we would be at this point.
No, but
you know. Yeah. And then she had that dumb appliance to prevent her tongue from coming forward. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, the crib appliance. Oh yeah.
Yeah. All the things I did to my poor baby. But you live and learn, right?
Oh, you do. I mean, my own sons and my oldest, I heard him grinding as well and never thought anything of it. He had an expander at a young age, and you know, he's older now, and you know, he's living on his own, but he still has sleep problems and has a hard time breathing through his nose. So
And then we have the kids who get all the treatment, like my own grandchildren are a very good example for me. And I haven't told my granddaughter's story on the podcast yet, but people have heard my grandson's story. And my grandson had a very high palate from birth. I was scared when I felt his palate, and I was like, oh no, you know, and we optimized as much as we could for him.
Of course.
But this is what brought me to the idea of, we have to be looking more carefully at what moms can handle in treatment plans.
Yes.
Because I watched my daughter struggling to manage all the new things of being a new mom and try to do the therapies and it gave me a new respect of what we're asking moms to do, you know?
It can be a lot.
Yeah. And it was a lot. And she did the best she could. And he saw all of my team, and he's better. He had to have two releases. He does not snore. And Daniel, someday if you listen to Grandma, I hope you don't mind me talking about you. He's a very restless sleeper.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's got some behavior. Let's just say he's very spunky, right? Yeah. Let's just say that. He's three. He's allowed to be. He's very spunky. Very smart. That might be part of it. He's not snoring, though, and he's not breathing through his mouth. It's very unusual. Like, I'm like, there's a missing piece somewhere that we're not getting, you know, and he's fine and he's going to be wonderful. And he's gotten the best advantages more than most kids will get. But my point is, we can do all the things and still have sleep disordered breathing that doesn't appear to be in the realm. It's a lot. This is not an easy field.
It is not. And there are so many things that are connected to our breathing and sleep.
Yes.
This is just one area. And so when I talk to parents about it and patients, I'll say, you know, we're going to start here and let's see if we improve. If we don't, you know, if we get some improvement, but not complete, let's go to the next step. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, whether it's getting the tonsils removed first or whether it's expanding first, seeing that if that helps shrink down the tonsils, if they're getting better nasal patency, or it's, you know, their palate's already wide, but they're grinding and their tongue is tied. And, you know, we try to figure out where we start that's going to have the most benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I talk to parents about and patients, you know, is, you know, a release may not be the right thing right now, or maybe we need to look someplace else.
Right.
There are so many different areas that we can look at.
Yeah. So Dr. Hatch, I just want to say that, you know, thank you for being the type of dentist who is a team player, number one, who is open to continued learning and who is taking, from what it sounds to me, a very individualized approach in your practice. So thank you for that.
Of course.
And thank you so much for spending time with us today. I know you have a busy, busy life, and I really appreciate that. Yeah. And then I just want to ask you if there's anything else that you'd like to share with our audience, you know, if you want to tell us where to find you, if you're in San Diego, what's the name of your practice?
So I'm down in San Diego. The practice is in Encinitas. It's called the Oral Tie Center of San Diego. I've been working in this field for, you know, almost 10 years now, and I'm always trying to learn more. There's more that I know that I don't know, and I want to improve so that we can give that best individualized care. I think that's a good point, is we need to treat our patients as individuals. Yes, we get data that's, you know, out there for everyone, and we can generalize that for a lot of people. But when it comes down to the nitty gritty, we need to individualize the patient and individualize the care for each patient, and so that they know that they're being taken care of as an individual, as a person.
That's beautiful. That's a perfect place to end. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Tongue Tie Experts podcast. Check out the show notes for useful links about the topics we discussed and for ways to follow us on social media. Please subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app. And if you enjoyed listening, we'd love it if you'd rate, review, and share with your friends and colleagues. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Are you a healthcare professional working with breastfeeding infants? Wish you knew more about assessing and treating tongue ties? Earn continuing education credits and transform your practice with the Professional's Guide to Tongue Tie in the Breastfeeding Infant. It's perfect for any practitioner who works with infants and their mothers, especially those working through feeding challenges. Learn to identify who needs treatment, build a qualified care team, and provide holistic care options. Discover the ins and outs of phrenotomy, including procedure preparation and best aftercare practices. By the end, you'll be confidently supporting breastfeeding families armed with the latest protocols and be part of an interdisciplinary community of experts just like you. Tongue ties are nothing new, but the right way to assess and treat them is. Ready to make a real difference? Join now and become a tongue tie expert. Sign up today at tonguetieexperts.net/professional and become the evidence-based resource that your community needs. To show my gratitude, I'm offering you a special discount as a podcast listener. Use code PODCAST40 to save 40% off today.